Chapter 30. Ruffy held up the brown bottle and inspected it ruefully. Seems like one mouthful and it's empty. He threw the bottle out of the side window. It hit a tree and burst with a small pop. "We can always find our way back by following the empties," smiled Bruce, once more marvelling at the man's capacity. But there was plenty of storage space. He watched Ruffy's stomach spread onto his lap as he reached down to the beer crate. "How are we doing, boss?" Bruce glanced at the milometer. "We've come 87 miles." And Ruffy nodded. "Not bad going. Be there pretty soon now." They were silent. The wind blew in onto them through the open front. The grass that grew between the tracks brushed the bottom of the chassis with a continuous rushing sound. "Boss?" Ruffy spoke at last. "Yes?"
"Lieutenant Hendry, those diamonds, you reckon we did a good thing leaving them there?"
"He's stranded in the middle of the bush. Even if he did find them, they wouldn't do him much good."
"Suppose that's right."
Ruffy lifted the beer bottle to his lips, and when he lowered it, he went on. "Mind you, that's one guy you can never be sure of." He tapped his head with a finger as thick and as black as a blood sausage. "Something wrong with him. He's one of the maddest Arabs I've found in a long time of looking."
Bruce grunted grimly.
"You want to be careful there, boss," observed Ruffy. "Any time now he's going to try for you. I've seen it coming. He's working himself up to it. He's a mad Arab."
"I'll watch him," said Bruce.
"Yeah, you do that."
Again they were silent in the steady swish of the wind and the drone of the motor.
"There's the railway." Ruffy pointed to the blue gravelled embankment through the trees.
"Nearly there," said Bruce.
They came out into another open glade, and beyond it the water tank at M'Sapa Junction stuck up above the forest.
"Here we are," said Ruffy, and drained the bottle in his hand.
"Just say a prayer that the telegraph lines are still up, and that there's an operator on the Elizabethville end."
Bruce slowed the Ford past the row of cottages. They were exactly as he remembered them, deserted and forlorn. The corners of his mouth were compressed into a hard angle as he looked at the two small mounds of earth beneath the acacia flora trees. Ruffy looked at them also, but neither of them spoke. Bruce stopped the Ford outside the station building, and they climbed out stiffly and walked together onto the veranda. The wooden flooring echoed dully under their boots as they made for the door of the office. Bruce pushed the door open and looked in. The walls were painted a depressing utility green. Loose paper was scattered on the floor. The drawers of the single desk hung open, and a thin grey skin of dust coated everything.
"There she is," said Ruffy, and pointed to the brass and varnished wood complexity of the telegraph on a table against the far wall.
"Looks all right," said Bruce.
"As long as the lines haven't been cut."
As if to reassure him, the telegraph began to clatter like a typewriter.
"Thank God for that," sighed Bruce. They walked across to the table.
"You know how to work this thing?" asked Ruffy.
"Sort of," Bruce answered, and set his rifle against the wall. He was relieved to see a Morse table stuck with adhesive tape to the wall above the apparatus. It was a long time since he'd memorized it as a Boy Scout. He laid his hand on the transmission key and studied the table. The call sign for Elizabethville was EE. He tapped it out clumsily and then waited. Almost immediately the set clattered back at him, much too fast to be intelligible, and the roll of paper in the repeater was exhausted. Bruce took off his helmet and laboriously spelled out, "Transmit slower." It was a long business with requests for repetition. "Not understood" was made nearly every second signal, but finally Bruce got the operator to understand that he had an urgent message for Colonel Franklin of President Tshombe's staff. "Wait," came back the laconic signal. And they waited. They waited an hour, then two.
"That mad bastard's forgotten about us," grumbled Ruffy, and went to the Ford to fetch the beer crate.
Bruce fidgeted restlessly on the unpadded chair beside the telegraph table. He reconsidered anxiously all his previous arguments for leaving Wally Henry in charge of the camp, but once again decided that it was safe. He couldn't do much harm. Unless Charmaine. No, it was impossible. Not with 40 loyal gendarmes to protect her. He started to think about Charmaine and the future. There was a year's mercenary captain's pay accumulated in the Credit Banque Suisse at Zurich. He made the conversion from francs to pounds, about 2,500. 2 years operating capital, so they could have a holiday before he started working again. They could take a chalet up in the mountains. There could be good snow this time of the year. Bruce grinned, snow that crunched like sugar, and a 12-inch thick eiderdown on the bed at night. Life had purpose and direction again.
"What are you laughing at, boss?" asked Ruffy.
"I was thinking about a bed."
"Yeah?
That's a good thing to think about. You start there, you're born there, you spend most of your life in it, you have plenty of fun in it, and if you're lucky, you die there. How's it for a beer?"
The telegraph came to life at Bruce's elbow. He turned to it quickly.
"Curry, Franklin," it clattered. Bruce could imagine the wiry, red-faced little man at the other end, ex-major in the 3rd Brigade of the Legion, a prime mover in the OAS, with a sizable price still on his head from the de Gaulle assassination attempt.
"Franklin, Curry," Bruce tapped back. "Train unserviceable. Motorized transport stranded without fuel. Port Reprieve Road. Map reference, approx." He read the numbers off the sheet on which he had noted them. There was a long pause, then, "Is UMC property in your hands?" The question was delicately phrased.
"Affirmative," Bruce assured him.
"Await airdrop at your position soonest. Out."
"Message understood. Out."
Bruce straightened from the telegraph and sighed with relief.
"That's that, Ruffy. They'll drop gas to us from one of the Dakotas, probably tomorrow morning." He looked at his wristwatch. 20 to 1. Let's get back."
Bruce hummed softly, watching the double tracks ahead of him, guiding the Ford with a light touch on the wheel. He was contented. It was all over. Tomorrow the fuel would drop from the Dakota under those yellow parachutes. He must lay out the smudge signals this evening. And 10 hours later they'd be back in Elizabethville. A few words with Carl Engelbrecht would fix seats for Charmaine and himself on one of the outward-bound decks. Then Switzerland, and the chalet with icicles hanging from the eaves. A long rest while he decided where to start again. Louisiana was under Roman-Dutch law, or was it Code Napoleon? He might even have to rewrite his bar examinations, but the prospect pleased rather than dismayed him. It was fun again.
"Never seen you so happy," grunted Ruffy.
"Never had so much cause," Bruce agreed.
"She's a swell lady. Young still, you can teach her."
Bruce felt his hackles rise, and then he thought better of it and laughed.
"You going to sign her up, boss?"
"I might." Ruffy nodded wisely.
"Man should have plenty wives. I got 3. Need a couple more. One I could only just handle."
"One's difficult.
2's easier.
3 you can relax.
4 they're so busy with each other they don't give you no trouble at all."
"I might try it."
"Yeah, you do that."
And ahead of them, through the trees, they saw the ring of trucks.
"We're home," grunted Ruffy. Then he stirred uncomfortably in his seat.
"Something going on?"
Men stood in small groups. There was something in their attitude, strain, apprehension. 2 men ran up the road to meet them. Bruce could see their mouths working but could not hear the words. Dread, heavy and cold, pushed down on the pit of Bruce's gut. Gabbled, incoherent, Sergeant Jacques was trying to tell him something as he ran beside the Ford. "Tenente Henry, the river, the Madame, gone." French words like driftwood in the torrent of dialect. "Your girl," translated Ruffy. "Hendra's done her." "Dead?" The question dropped from Bruce's mouth. "No, he's hurt her. He's, you know." "Where's she?" "They've got her in the back of the truck." Bruce climbed heavily out of the car. Now they were silent, grouped together, not looking at him. Faces impassive, waiting. Bruce walked slowly to the truck. He felt cold and numb. His legs moved automatically beneath him. He drew back the canvas and pulled himself up into the interior. It was an effort to move forward, to focus his eyes in the gloom. Wrapped in a blanket, she lay small and still. "Charmaine." It stuck in his throat. "Charmaine," he said again, and knelt beside her. A great livid swelling distorted the side of her face. She did not turn her head to him, but lay staring up at the canvas roof. He touched her face, and the skin was cold, cold as the dread that gripped his stomach. The coldness of it shocked him, so he jerked his hand away. "Charmaine." This time it was a sob. The eyes, her big haunted eyes, turned unseeing towards him, and he felt the lift of escape from the certainty of her death. "Oh, God," he cried, and took her to him, holding the unresisting frailty of her to his chest. He could feel the slow, even thump of her heart beneath his hand. He drew back the blanket, and there was no blood. "Darling, are you hurt? Tell me, are you hurt?" She did not answer. She lay quietly in his arms, not seeing him. "Shock," he whispered. "It's only shock." And he opened her clothing. With tenderness, he examined the smoothly pale body. The skin was clammy and damp, but there was no damage. He wrapped her again and laid her gently back onto the floor. He stood, and the thing within him changed shape. Cold still, but now burning cold as dry ice. Ruffy and Jacques were waiting for him beside the tailboard. "Where is he?" asked Bruce softly. "He is gone."
"Where?"
"That way." Jacques pointed towards the southeast. I followed the spore a short distance. Bruce walked to the ford and picked up his rifle from the floor. He opened the cubbyhole and took two spare clips of ammunition from it. Ruffy followed him.
"He's got the diamonds, boss."
"Yes," said Bruce and checked the load of his rifle. The diamonds were of no importance.
"Are you going after him, boss?"
Bruce did not answer. Instead, he looked up at the sky. The sun was halfway towards the horizon, and there were clouds thickly massed around it. "Ruffy, stay with her," he said softly. "Keep her warm." Ruffy nodded. "Who's the best tracker we've got?"
"Jacques. Worked for a safari outfit before the war as a tracker boy."
Bruce turned to Jacques. The thing was still icy cold inside him, with tentacles that spread out to every extremity of his body and his mind. "When did this happen?"
"About an hour after you left," answered Jacques.
8 hours' start. It was a long lead.
"Take the spore," said Bruce softly.